Today's episode involves a child under the age of 10 and may be disturbing to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. In the early morning hours of April 6, 1986, 9-year-old Anthonette Cayadito got out of bed to answer a knock at the door. Hours later, when her family began preparing for the day, they discovered that Anthonette was gone. After asking neighbors and searching the area, Anthonette's mother called the Gallup, New Mexico Police Department. Extensive searches took place the following day, but no sign of Anthonette could be found. A few neighbors reported seeing a dark-colored van or truck parked outside the family's home in the early morning hours, but no one had seen Anthonette herself. Police theorized that the young girl had been abducted, and possibly by someone she knew. Over the course of the next 30 years, there would be countless sightings, though none would be confirmed. A year after her disappearance, a young woman who claimed to be Anthonette called the Gallup Police Department, though the legitimacy of this call has been strongly debated. 5 years later, a waitress in Nevada reported a bizarre experience with a young woman who resembled Anthonette. A year later, Anthonette's younger sister, who had been 5 at the time of her abduction, told police that she had actually witnessed the event. According to the child, Anthonette had been taken by a man and placed in the back of a brown van. Police believed her story, though later a detective on the case would point an accusatory finger towards Anthonette's own mother. Who abducted Anthonette Cayadito? Where was she taken? And is it possible she's still alive somewhere out there? This is Trace Evidence, Episode 85, The Abduction of Anthonette Cayadito. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today we examine one of the most highly requested cases in the abduction of Anthonette Cayadito. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focusing on a different unsolved case each week. If you have questions, comments, or case suggestions, email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at @TraceEvPod, on Instagram at @TraceEvidencePodcast, or join the Facebook discussion group simply by searching for Trace Evidence. You can visit the website at trace-evidence.com for full episodes, social media links, merchandise, and more. As a final note, Trace Evidence is a complete one-man operation, so if you'd like to help support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/traceevidence, where you can gain rewards such as stickers, pins, and other surprises. If Patreon isn't your thing, but you still want to pitch in, there is a PayPal donation button on the website. Also, stick around at the end of today's episode for details regarding a contest that could make you a part of Trace Evidence. Today we examine a haunting case that has resonated for decades, filled with speculation, suspicion, and confusion, but few facts. This is Episode 85, The Abduction of Anthonette Cayadito. Anthonette Christine Cayadito was born to parents Teresa Penny Cayadito and Larry Estrada on December 25, 1976. Right off the bat, I should note some confusion surrounding Anthonette's parentage. Many articles and websites list Anthonette's father as being a man named Anthony Montoya. However, a man named Larry Estrada has also been listed as Anthonette's biological father. Speculation suggests Montoya may only have been the man Penny was in a relationship with at the time of Anthonette's birth, and it's been said he may have been the father of Anthonette's 2 younger sisters, Wendy and Sunita, who was often called Sadie. There's a lot of confusion revolving around this particular topic, with Estrada being listed at times as Anthonette's birth father and later her stepfather. But in multiple interviews, law enforcement officers have specified that Larry Estrada was Anthonette's biological father. Anthonette would grow up in Gallup, New Mexico, located in McKinley County in the northwest of the state. Gallup sits on what was once Navajo land and now touches the edges of a Navajo reservation to the north. On her mother's side, Anthonette is part Navajo, The city of Gallup has a varied populace, with 44% of its 22,000 residents coming from a Native American background. And these residents have been described as being from several different tribes, including the Navajo, Hopi, and Zuni. Famous Route 66 passes through the 13.4 square miles that make up the city of Gallup, while the southern end of Route 491 begins in the city. Route 491 was previously known as Route 666, but was renamed in 2003 after a push from Governor Bill Richardson, as that number is associated with the devil in Christianity. Today, Gallup is known for being an area of high crime, scoring a violent crime rate 5 times that of the national average. Regardless of the confusion surrounding Antoinette's biological father, we do know that her mother, Penny, would raise her 3 girls on her own, being separate from both Estrada and Montoya. Estrada worked as a carpenter and lived on the north side of town with his new wife, and from what can be ascertained through interviews, was involved in Antoinette's life to some degree. What's interesting about Antoinette's childhood is that, from all accounts I could find, she's never really described as a child. Yes, she enjoyed having fun and playing with her sisters, but both Penny and Estrada talk about her as though she was an adult. According to Estrada, Antoinette was cooking for her sisters by the time she was 6 years old, and it seems fairly apparent that the child played a role in raising her younger sisters. Several times I've come across either Penny or Estrada referring to Antoinette with such descriptors as level-headed, mature, and dependable. In an interview with the Albuquerque Journal, Estrada said of Antoinette, quote, "She was 9, going on 15, end quote. Antoinette lived with her mother and 2 sisters in an apartment, number 9, located at 204 Arnold Street, off Route 66. Antoinette attended school as a 4th grader at Lincoln Elementary, located on Old Zuni Road, less than a mile from the apartment. According to all reports, she was a bright young woman who never caused any trouble, and again, was described as being mature for her age and well-behaved. Wendy, years later, when asked about her sister, had to admit painfully that she couldn't really remember her very well. She was only 5 at the time, and Wendy would later state, quote, "The story I always heard was that Antoinette was like our mommy. She made sure all our clothes were ironed for the week, made sure we were fed and the house was clean. When our mom went out, we usually had adult supervision, but a majority of times it was my sister helping the babysitter take care of us. I really don't want to lie and say I remember everything about her. I don't. I just go off the pictures and off the stories I was told as years go by. I really don't know her. It hurts me." End quote. Few details about Antoinette's personality and behavior have ever really been discussed. Of course, she was 9 years old at the time she was taken, and so perhaps few details of her personality had truly emerged yet. What we know is that she acquired the nickname Squirrel and that she loved the color purple. She reportedly enjoyed the music of Ronnie Millsap and had what several have described as a strong and caring heart. In one interview, Wendy described it as a caregiver's heart. Antoinette was concerned about those around her, especially her sisters, and worked hard to ensure everything was set in the best way it could be. Several people have talked about there being a strong relationship between Antoinette, her sisters, and their mother. Reports of the time indicate while all 3 girls had their own beds, it wasn't uncommon for them to share Penny's bed with her. It seems apparent that Antoinette, as the eldest, took on a great deal of responsibility, and it's been reported multiple times that Penny would typically spend her nights out with friends at bars dotted along Route 66. Antoinette would be home, looking after her sisters, with or without the aid of a babysitter. I should note, there's been a lot of speculation over the years that Penny may have been involved with drugs at the time, and law enforcement has acknowledged their belief that Estrada was definitely involved with drugs, perhaps even dealing, during this period. Despite this, there aren't any reports of the time of Penny appearing to be addicted or strung out in any way, though alcohol certainly played a role in her life. Frequently, Penny would be out with friends into the late hours of the night, and that would be the exact situation which occurred on the evening of April 5th, 1986. 33 years old and a mother to 3 young daughters, Penny had plans to go out with friends on that Saturday night. Antoinette and her sisters would remain home in the care of a babysitter while Penny headed towards Talk of the Town, a popular bar situated along Route 66. I do want to note here, despite my sincerest efforts, I've never been able to locate a single document that actually names the babysitter, or discusses whether or not he or she was a regular babysitter or if Penny had several different babysitters. According to police, Penny has stated that she arrived home at approximately midnight as April 5th changed to Sunday, April 6th. At this time, Penny relieved the babysitter, sending him home, and then proceeded to allow her three daughters to stay up later. According to Penny, she spent the next 3 hours after she got home talking to Antoinette. Wendy and Sadie slowly began to fade as the hours grew later, but Penny recounts talking to her eldest daughter until approximately 3 a.m. Now, in reports of the time, there came a knock on the apartment door. Later reports and new interviews conducted in the years since have suggested that Antoinette and Sadie were both still awake at the time this first knock came. I admit being somewhat confused by the timeline, as if Antoinette and Sadie were still awake, and Penny has said she talked to Antoinette until 3 a.m., how did she not hear this knock? However, Sadie was 7, and her accounting of time may not be exactly accurate, especially considering how early in the morning it was. Most reports suggest the first knock came not long after 3 a.m., but this can't really be confirmed. Reportedly, when this first knock occurred, Sadie and Antoinette heard it. I've read a few articles which suggest that Sadie and Antoinette chose not to answer the door because they didn't recognize the man who was at it, nor did they recognize his voice. These details are a bit confusing, as it suggests that the man knocking on the door spoke through it, and at least one of the children may have seen him through a window, but this is never specified, nor is anything the man may have said. In one particular account, I've read that Sadie was unable to describe the man who knocked. After the man left and the apartment grew quiet once again, Sadie has later said that she drifted off to sleep. In some places, it's been said that Antoinette stayed awake, while in others, it's reported that she too fell asleep. Either way, what is known beyond argument is that another knock on the door will happen sometime between 3:30 a.m. and 7 a.m. The full details of this second knock won't be revealed for years, but at the time, law enforcement would be told a second knock was heard, a male voice came through the door, and Antoinette got out of bed to go check the door. At approximately 7 a.m. on Sunday, April 6th, Penny awoke and found Sadie and Wendy in bed with her, though Antoinette was not present. The girls attended Bible school on Sundays, and Antoinette has been said to have been very devoted to and interested in her faith. She often looked forward to Sundays due to this, but on this Sunday, she was nowhere to be found. Penny wasn't generally concerned in that moment, as Antoinette was often up early, doing work around the house, preparing breakfast, whatever she might get herself into. It wasn't until Penny began moving around the apartment that she grew concerned, as there was no indication that Antoinette was home. In an interview with Unsolved Mysteries, Penny would state, quote, "We went looking for her around the house. Nothing. I didn't start panicking until we checked with all the neighbors, went to every house, and nobody had seen her." End quote. According to Penny, she had locked the front door when she'd arrived home the night before, but found it unlocked in the morning. A story emerges around this time that Penny thought Antoinette might be out helping a neighbor look for a missing dog. Apparently, there was a group of children on the hunt for this dog which had gone missing, and when Penny learned about it, she figured that's where Antoinette must have gone. Penny and several neighbors scoured the area around the apartment, as well as the nearby hills, but found no indication that Antoinette had gone anywhere. According to Penny, after calling out her name for a long time, finding no one who had seen Antoinette that morning, and not seeing her amongst the children searching for the dog, she finally made the decision to contact the police and report her daughter missing. Or more specifically, it's been said that Penny told the police her daughter had been abducted. Her next call was to Larry Estrada, who would come over to help with the search. I've read a few reports that suggest that, at the time Penny called 911, believed to be approximately 11 a.m. on Sunday, she was told she had to wait 24 hours before reporting her daughter missing. I've also read that she was told she had to wait 8 hours and called the police again at 8 p.m. Deputy Chief of Police John Allen would later say, quote, "Back then, we had to wait 24 hours before considering a child missing," end quote, which seems to confirm that reports about the 911 call are accurate. The official search for Antoinette did not begin until the next day, Monday, April 7th, more than 24 hours after she was initially reported missing. When police arrived at the scene, their first steps were to speak with Penny, Sadie, and Wendy while other investigators went through the apartment. At the time, One of the children reportedly told police about the knocks on the door, though Penny said she didn't hear them, and that Antoinette knew better than to open the door to a stranger. In the apartment, it was quick to note that there was nothing which indicated forced entry or any kind of a struggle, and so police initially believed that Antoinette may have gone along willingly with her abductor. It may have been someone she knew. It was also reported at the time that none of Antoinette's clothing was missing, other than the knee-length pink nightgown she was wearing at the time she vanished. The Gallup Police Department didn't wait long at all to involve the state police. The search, which would last through Wednesday, involved multiple agencies as well as local volunteers and the state police's search and rescue team. Early on in the search, a tracking dog was brought in, though it failed to pick up Antoinette's scent outside of the apartment. The search, which began close to the home, would eventually spin out for several miles, extending across the entire town of Gallup. While some searched in the foothills, others went door to door displaying photos of Antoinette, looking for anyone who may have seen the 9-year-old in the hours or days since her disappearance. While no one had seen Antoinette, and the search was ultimately called off on Wednesday due to a lack of information or evidence, authorities did locate a neighbor who had seen something interesting in the hours before Antoinette was reported missing. An older female neighbor said that on the morning of Antoinette's disappearance, she noted the presence of an old brown truck, or possibly van, with New Mexico license plates parked in front of the apartment. According to interviews with the neighbor, she didn't think much of the vehicle being there as it wasn't uncommon for people to come and go from Penny's home at all hours of the night. The neighbor would go on to explain that she witnessed a man exiting the vehicle, approaching the front door of the home, and knocking sometime between 6:30 and 7 a.m. The witness stated she didn't pay much attention beyond that as, again, it was fairly typical for people to be visiting the home at various times. This statement was corroborated by at least one other neighbor who noted the presence of the brown vehicle. No witness was able to describe the man seen approaching the home. When authorities spoke to Penny and other members of the family, none of them could think of anyone they knew who owned a brown van or truck. With the search called off, witnesses reporting the brown vehicle, and stories about knocks on the door during the night, authorities classified the case as a kidnapping. Unfortunately, outside of these details, they had no physical evidence to work with. Despite 2 days of searching, no one had found a single trace of Antoinette, and if the neighbors were to be believed, it was considered highly possible that Antoinette may have been taken into the brown vehicle and driven elsewhere. Route 66 wasn't far away. On Thursday, April 10th, Detective Danny Ross spoke with a reporter from the Albuquerque Journal, stating, quote, "We have to look at it as an abduction now. If she had gone with someone willingly, contact would have been made by now. We're starting at ground zero." End quote. The article discusses how the investigation would be reset, with Gallup authorities explaining that they are going back and conducting follow-up interviews with family, friends, and neighbors. Reportedly, authorities had difficulty tracking down some members of the family. One interesting detail, which was discovered during follow-up questioning, had to do with the door to the home. As previously mentioned, Penny noted that she had locked the door when she'd come home and found it unlocked the next morning. However, Penny added that she had also locked the screen door, meaning that Antoinette opened the apartment door, she'd have to unlatch the screen for the perpetrator to then be able to grab her. Authorities felt this more strongly connected to Antoinette knowing her abductor, though others have argued that jimmying open the latch of a screen door isn't exactly a challenge, and the abductor could have opened the screen and been waiting for Antoinette to open the door. For police, though, had Antoinette been taken by someone she knew, the question became about motive. There'd been no ransom demands. There'd been no contact with the abductor at all. Typically, in child abduction cases, authorities go by statistics, which suggest that 74% of abducted children are murdered within the first 3 hours of abduction when it involves a stranger. According to a 2017 report by NCIC, statistically speaking, 49% of all abductions are classified as family kidnappings, while 27% are acquaintance kidnappings, with only 24% being stranger abductions. Family kidnappings are typically committed by one of the parents and is the only category for which the abductor is female 43% of the time, the highest percentage of female abductors in any of the categories. Acquaintance kidnappings, though, typically have a higher percentage of juvenile abductors, and the vast majority of these abductions take place at the victim's home. Sadly, this category also has the highest percentage chance that a victim will be injured during the abduction. Stranger kidnappings usually happen at outdoor locations, and often the victim meets the abductor within a quarter mile of their own home. At the time, Gallup police believed that Antoinette must have known her abductor, in some way, placing her in either the family kidnapping or acquaintance kidnapping categories. Gallup Police Chief Frank Gonzalez made note that while the official search had been called off, they were still getting the word out and had recently reached out to law enforcement in the towns of Grants, some 60 miles to the southeast, and Albuquerque, 138 miles to the east, based around a tip received via telephone, though Chief Gonzalez chose not to go into detail about that particular tip, stating that they were, quote, checking out every lead, the case won't be closed until we find her, end quote. Around this same time, Crime Stoppers began offering a $500 reward for information leading to Antoinette's whereabouts. Penny, along with Estrada, were already growing frustrated with police, who they felt were not being very helpful or communicative, nor did they feel authorities were putting all their efforts into finding Antoinette. Estrada told a reporter, quote, I've got street people that aren't very friendly with the law. I figure I can get more information from the street right now. Maybe they can bring something to me. The word's out. End quote. Penny, however, chose to channel her frustrations with the police in another direction. She reached out to a highly respected Navajo medicine woman in the area who came to the apartment to conduct what was referred to as a handshaking ceremony in hopes of gathering information about Antoinette's whereabouts. I do want to note here that this ceremony will not be the first time that Penny would turn to a medicine woman or a psychic in hopes of gathering information. Unfortunately, nothing of note was obtained in this particular instance. For the family, it was devastating. Penny's other two daughters noted how, over the years, the abduction dramatically impacted their lives and Penny's ability to be a mother. Wendy later stated, quote, "It just broke my whole family up. It was a very dark and dysfunctional time," end quote. Reportedly, Penny began drinking more and eventually began using drugs to try and numb her pain. Wendy would follow suit in later years. Unfortunately, the case revolving around Antoinette began growing cold almost from the first day. After initial reports of knocks on the door, a brown vehicle, a man seen approaching the apartment, nothing more could be developed. Tips were called in, tracked down, and often led to nothing. While the family was increasingly frustrated by the way law enforcement was handling the case, law enforcement felt they were doing all they could, but had little to work with. Interestingly, after speaking with multiple children living in the area at the time of Antoinette's disappearance, one name continued to get mentioned as a possible suspect. The man was 62-year-old Wellesley Daniels, and at least four young boys had told police that on separate occasions, he had taken them for picnics, which resulted in them being sexually assaulted. Daniels was arrested 2 months after Antoinette's disappearance, and would later be sentenced to 32 years in prison after being charged with 12 counts of sex crimes. While authorities thought there may have been a link between Daniels and Antoinette, he was known to be in the neighborhood the day she disappeared. This theory was slowly eroded as none of the boys reported ever seeing Antoinette with Daniels, nor was she present on their picnics, and Penny claimed that Antoinette did not know Daniels and she would not have opened the door for him. Ultimately, authorities could find nothing to link Daniels to Antoinette. Over the course of the next year, Antoinette's family would exchange some jabs with law enforcement and the local media, even accusing the Gallup Police Department of failing to give them updates, saying that at one time, Penny went more than 6 months without hearing from anyone who had been working on the case. It wouldn't be until a year after her disappearance that authorities would receive what they believed to be a new piece of evidence that suggested Antoinette was still alive. On April 12, 1987, 1 year and 6 days after Antoinette's abduction, the Gallup Police Department received a disturbing phone call. On the call, a young girl identifies herself as Antoinette Calladito before another voice is heard confronting her about being on the phone, and then the young woman's screams can be heard as she is forcibly removed from the phone. I will now play the audio. If you don't want to hear it, skip ahead about 25 seconds.
Gallup Police Department. Hello.
I'm Antoinette Calladito.
I'm Antoinette Calladito. Okay, whereabouts in Albuquerque?
You said you could use a boat.
Hello? Antoinette, where are you? Antoinette?
The call was automatically recorded, though it did not last long enough for police to be able to trace its point of origin. The call has been described as being 40 seconds long, though the audio released is only 22 seconds. Reportedly, in the full version, a second voice described as an elderly male can be heard, and whether or not the adult voice heard in this clip is male or female is up for debate, though authorities did believe it to be male. When the audio was played for Penny, she was adamant that it was her daughter Antoinette's voice. In her interview on Unsolved Mysteries, Penny stated, quote, "I listened to that tape over and over and over. Just by the way she says her last name and the way she screamed sent chills all over my body. Because a mother knows, and I know that was her." End quote. The legitimacy of this call has been hotly debated over the years. While many believe the call is the real thing and that it was in fact Antoinette placing the call, others have argued that it could have been a prank call or perhaps something more sinister. The primary issue with this call is from the fact that while it rang into the Gallup police, this call was not a 911 call. The person who made the call had directly dialed the local number for the Gallup Police Department, its non-emergency number, making many wonder if this was Antoinette and she was trying to get help, why wouldn't she have simply dialed 911? Also, what are the chances that Antoinette, 10 years old at the time, would have known the local number for the Gallup Police Department? In the call, the young girl says she's in Albuquerque. Had she dialed 911, she'd have gotten an Albuquerque police department. At the time, authorities went with the audio being legitimate based on Penny's confirmation. This audio, captured in 1987, will not be released to the public until 1989. Authorities at the time reported that they feared releasing the audio when they'd received it, as it could put Antoinette in physical danger were her abductors to discover that she'd called the police. Release of the phone call did result in several tips being called in from various locations throughout the United States. However, each lead was tracked and only led to dead ends. No reported sightings of Antoinette were confirmed. While the call reinvigorated the case, the energy drawn from it wouldn't last long, and as quickly and dramatically as the call had come into the investigation, it just as quickly faded, and things began to grow cold once again. In what many consider to be a tragic and strange coincidence, Antoinette was not the only person to vanish out of the life of her father, Larry Estrada. On September 5, 1989, Estrada's 25-year-old mentally challenged sister, Louisa, disappeared after going out for an evening walk. Deluvina Estrada, Larry and Louisa's mother, described her daughter as throwing fits and tantrums if she happened to be away from her home for more than a few hours, and that she had the mental capacity of that of a 5 to 7 year old. Louisa was last seen in a park on the north side of Gallup, speaking to a man in his late 20s. As far as I've been able to ascertain, there have been no developments on this particular missing persons case, and I don't believe Louisa has ever been found. There would not be another development until 1991, after the FBI released 2 computer images showing what Antoinette may look like then at the age of 14. 4 months after releasing these images, police in Carson City, Nevada, received a call from a waitress with a curious story. Carson City is located approximately 880 miles to the northwest of Gallup. A waitress working in a local restaurant had what she described as a strange experience. This waitress spoke with officers from the Carson City Police Department and detailed the encounter she'd had just hours earlier. According to the woman, she was set to serve a table made up of 2 adults, 1 male and 1 female, and a young woman who was described as being somewhere in her early teens. The waitress described the adults as appearing unkempt, and by everything I've read, they were believed to have been Caucasian. At first, the waitress didn't think much of it until the young girl dropped her fork. Reportedly, the young girl dropped her fork and other utensils multiple times, each time resulting in the waitress picking the utensils up for her. During one of these instances, the waitress says that she was placing the utensil back on the table when the young woman reached out and grabbed her hand, delivering a firm squeeze. The waitress thought this was odd, but at the time didn't read too much into it. It's only in hindsight that she described the young woman as appearing to be in distress. After the group finished eating, the waitress returned to clear the table and collect the bill. It was at this time that the waitress reported, upon lifting the plate that the young woman had been eating from, she found a crumpled up napkin beneath it. The napkin appeared to have writing on it, and when the waitress pressed the napkin out flat, she was met with a message reading, "Help me, call police." By the time the waitress put two and two together in her head, the three individuals were nowhere to be found. According to police, the waitress said that the young woman may have been the missing teen, Antoinette Calladito. While police passed this story on to the Gallup Police Department, the sighting could never be confirmed, and to this day, there's a debate about whether or not the young woman in the restaurant that day was Antoinette Calladito, another abducted child, or perhaps a willing participant in a bizarre prank. While the waitress's story couldn't be confirmed, this would not be the last time Antoinette's case came into sharper focus during the year of 1991. Due to the reported sighting, Detective Marty Escabeil and FBI agent Kevin Miles decided to pay a visit to Wendy, Antoinette's younger sister, while she was in school to ask her what she remembered from the night of the abduction. Wendy had been 5 years old at the time and had previously told police that she had heard the second knock on the door but had gone back to sleep. Now, 10 years old, when Wendy was asked to relay the details of that night once again, she had a very different story to tell. According to Wendy, she did not go back to sleep that night, but instead got out of bed and followed her older sister. While Antoinette approached the door, Wendy hung back, though it's unclear whether or not Antoinette was aware that her younger sister was following her. Wendy claimed that the man knocked on the door, and Antoinette called out asking who it was. The man allegedly responded by saying, "It's Uncle Joe," at which time Antoinette opened the door. Wendy says that as soon as Antoinette opened the door, the man reached out and grabbed her, covering her mouth with his hand. Wendy stated that Antoinette struggled with her assailant, squirming and calling out for him to let her go. Some accounts of this story claim that there was another man present and the two men abducted Antoinette together. While this is unclear, what is known is that Antoinette was taken to a brown van where she was thrown into the back before the van drove off. When Wendy was asked why she hadn't told this story before, the 10-year-old told investigators that her mother was crying and very upset after Antoinette's disappearance, and she was afraid that if she told this story, she would upset her mother more or maybe even get in trouble. Wendy was unable to give a good physical description of the man or men involved in the abduction. Her memory was too vague, and it's important to remember this is a 10-year-old recalling a memory from when she was 5. At the time, investigators said they believed the story and that it helped fill in some gaps for them. Interestingly, there was an Uncle Joe in Antoinette's life. At the time, Penny's sister was married to a man named Joe. Detectives paid Joe a visit to account for his whereabouts during the time that Antoinette was abducted. While details have never been fully revealed about this, detectives later said that Joe provided an alibi, which they were able to verify. The Joe angle may not have worked out, but if Wendy's story was to be believed, it did confirm for investigators the possibility that Antoinette's abductor had known her or her family and knew that using the name Uncle Joe would result in the door being opened. While Wendy's story had offered answers to some questions detectives had been asking for years, it did little to advance the investigation. Witnesses had previously noted a brown trucker van being present at the Calladito residence that night, and now they had direct confirmation from Wendy that that was the vehicle used to facilitate the abduction, but they were unable to track down anyone with a brown van or truck who had been in the area at that time. The reveal had shown new light on the case, but ultimately the case would once again grow cold. In hopes of discovering more information, Penny once again reached out to a medicine woman who would come to her home and conduct a crystal ceremony in which they would attempt to reach out to the spirit of the missing Antoinette. Following the ceremony, the medicine woman made a series of statements. Firstly, she said she believed that Antoinette was alive and being held somewhere in the American Southwest. According to the medicine woman, Antoinette may have had a child and was being held by threats of violence. The medicine woman also reported that she believed Antoinette was being held by someone she knew. Not long after the ceremony had been conducted, Penny, Detective Escabeil, and others sat down with the producers of Unsolved Mysteries. Everything which was known about the case up to that time was put into a segment which originally aired on December 23, 1992. While it was hoped that the national television exposure would bring more attention to the case and perhaps invite new tips, little came from this segment. A few tips were called in, though when they were run down by the FBI, they didn't lead to anything significant. There have been sightings of Antoinette all across the United States and even in Canada, though not a single one has ever been confirmed. Sadly, there would be no further developments in Antoinette's case. On April 18, 1999, Antoinette's mother, Penny, passed away at the age of 46. Her death was hardly reported on at the time, with it being mentioned only on one page of an Arizona newspaper, as Penny was in Phoenix at the time of her death. Detectives from the Gallup Police Department rushed to Penny's deathbed to question her one last time, but they were too late. In a later interview, Wendy addressed the fact that her mother developed severe drinking and drug problems following Antoinette's disappearance. Wendy herself fell into the same trap as she grew older, finding herself in troubling situations. She had been in and out of the criminal system, joined gangs, and when she was older, lost custody of her children. Despite the overwhelming odds, Wendy did turn her life back around in the early 2000s, and she attributes much of her troublesome behaviors as being directly associated with Antoinette's abduction. Unfortunately, Antoinette's case seemed to be frozen in time. In 2006, the FBI officially closed their investigation, citing a lack of leads or evidence. In Gallup, though, the case remains open, but there's been little activity. The case has passed through the hands of multiple investigators, though there have been no new leads or breaks. Antoinette does appear on the FBI's page for kidnapped and missing persons. Her case is listed as being handled by the Albuquerque Field Office, and there is a link to leave an anonymous tip if someone does possess information. On December 29, 2009, 4 days after what would be Antoinette's 33rd birthday, she was officially added to NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. DNA was taken from Antoinette's sisters and utilized in comparison to several Jane Does. For a period of time, there was a lot of discussion online about a Jane Doe recovered from a field near 98th and Tower Road in Albuquerque on May 2, 1996. The unidentified woman, described as a mixture of white, Hispanic, and Native American, had been brutally beaten to death. Her age was guessed to have been between 14 and 19 years old, and at that time, Antoinette would have been 19. After DNA analysis, Antoinette was ruled out as a possibility, and in subsequent years, she has been ruled out of 4 other Jane Doe comparisons. To this day, there is a devoted following of civilian investigators and researchers who are consistently looking for possible matches for Antoinette. More than a decade after Penny's passing, retired Gallup detective Marty Escabille made a curious comment to a reporter. In a 2010 article from the Gallup Herald, Escabille issued the following statement, quote, "I'm pretty confident Penny had knowledge of who took Antoinette based on her failing a polygraph test administered by the FBI," end quote. When this polygraph took place is unknown, though failing a polygraph isn't exactly an indication of guilt. However, the belief that Penny may have possessed more information about Antoinette's abduction is a common thread throughout the Gallup community. There have been rumors that in the weeks following Antoinette's disappearance, that Penny suddenly had extra cash, purchased a new car, and had a generally carefree attitude. This, of course, has to be taken with a grain of salt, as the rumor mill often churns out a lot more false details than accurate ones. There was also rumor that Penny was involved in the drug trade and may have either fallen into debt or perhaps made a deal, which involved the abduction of Antoinette. Gallup Deputy Chief of Police John Allen, interviewed in the same article, described the state of the case as being stalled, saying, quote, "We haven't had anything new on this case for almost 10 years, since the mother died. We've had several detectives look at this case over the years, but haven't been able to come up with anything new," end quote. When asked about what he believed was Antoinette's fate, Allen replied that based purely on statistics, investigators were led to believe she was deceased, though he qualified that saying, quote, "but we just don't know," end quote. Just 2 months ago, in May of 2019, several newspapers quietly reported that the FBI had renewed their investigation into the disappearance of Antoinette Cayadito. Antoinette was included in a feature on the FBI's website looking at National Missing Persons Day. Sadly, that is the most recent and last update regarding Antoinette's abduction. Antoinette was taken some 33 years ago, and not a day has gone by that someone hasn't been asking questions. Online, debate and discussion of her abduction is as heated and strong as ever. With so little information, conflicting details, and concerns regarding what facts are known, Three theories have been generally purported over the years. The first theory argues that Antoinette's abduction was conducted by a completely unknown individual, a stranger abduction. While many believe that Antoinette may have known her abductor, or perhaps that he knew her, others have argued that the complete lack of development seemed unlikely to be connected to someone who had connections to her or her family. The second theory suggests that Penny Cayadito may have played a role in Antoinette's abduction. Many people believe that Penny knew more about the abduction than she told authorities, including a former lead investigator on the case. What role Penny played is debated, with some believing she simply knew more than she shared, and others accusing the mother of being directly involved in the planning and execution of the abduction. The third and final theory is that which authorities developed early on, that Antoinette's abduction was conducted by someone from within her own community, or perhaps even her own family. For what reason Antoinette was taken, no one can say for sure, but there are a group who believe that not only was Antoinette taken by someone she knew, but perhaps she's still alive out there somewhere and doesn't know that she's missing, or maybe she does, but is being held by force. Antoinette Cayadito disappeared from her family's apartment in the early morning hours of April 6, 1986. At the time of her abduction, Antoinette was 9 years old and described as being biracial, Caucasian and Native American, with black hair and brown eyes. At the time of her abduction, Antoinette stood 4 feet 7 inches tall and weighed approximately 55 pounds. Antoinette had dark-colored moles on her right cheek, nose, back, and one of her ankles. There are scars on one of her knees as well as her lip. Her ears are both pierced. Some agencies reportedly use the name Antoinette, and she is described as being of both Navajo and Italian descent. She was last seen wearing an ankle-length pink nightgown. Obviously today, Antoinette would appear quite different, and if alive, she would be 42 years old. Age progress photos are available and depict Antoinette all the way to age 36. The abduction of Antoinette Cayadito is a deeply disturbing case. A 9-year-old beloved by friends and family who was described as being mature beyond her years and possessing a good heart vanishes from her own home. Years later, her little sister tells a story about the night Antoinette was abducted and how she witnessed a man taking her older sister away. For more than 30 years, detectives have worked on the case, as well as private investigators, independent researchers, and even so-called psychics. Despite their sincerest efforts, Antoinette has never been recovered, nor her fate revealed. 13 years after her abduction, Penny Cayadito went to a grave, never knowing the truth of what became of her daughter. Some believe that Penny may have taken secret knowledge with her to that grave. The truth of that theory is yet to be determined, but one fact cannot be disregarded. Someone knows exactly what happened to Antoinette Cayadito, and that person may still be out there. That person may even be listening now. And there is the possibility, slim maybe, but the possibility nonetheless, that Antoinette herself is still out there somewhere. And if she is, we can only hope that she is safe, and maybe someday we'll know for certain, one way or the other. But this is a 33-year-old mystery that needs to finally be solved. The mystery and sadness surrounding the abduction of Antoinette Cayadito stays with you. It's one of those cases where it feels like the answer should be there, but there's a huge chunk of the puzzle that just can't be found. Judging from the amounts of requests I've gotten to look at this case, I'd say I'm not the only one for whom this case remains a constant source of curiosity and confusion. Any abduction or disappearance is disturbing, but when it's a child, it just always feels worse. When it happens in the victim's own home, the one place where they should feel safe, there's something extra frightening about it. The vulnerability of a little girl in her nightgown answering the door and just being taken into the night. 33 years is a long time to go without a single confirmed sighting or any legitimate suspects. There's a lot of speculation circulating around this case. I suppose that's to be expected. When there's so little information available, so few clues to follow, so few leads to explore, people will often begin to fill in the cracks with their own thoughts and ideas. Over 30 years, that's a lot of different people throwing in their 2 cents, and when it comes right down to it, there are some areas of this case where it's difficult to discern fact from opinion. There's very little that we know for certain, and what knowledge we do possess doesn't exactly provide solid answers to the long list of questions associated with the abduction of Antoinette Cayodito. You'd think, after all this time, there'd be a ton of theories to look at, and while there are certainly theories that are out there on the fringe that I won't address, for the most part, everything can be boiled down to three specific theories. The first theory in this case is that Antoinette Cayodito may have been abducted from her home by a completely random assailant to whom she had no previous connection. There was a lot of debate early on in the investigation, and police, fairly quickly, began to believe that Antoinette had been taken by someone she knew. Whether this was a family member, friend of the family, or just someone who had been around in Antoinette's life in some way, couldn't be determined. However, there are those who believe that perhaps by latching on to the possibility that Antoinette knew her abductor, authorities may have missed other clues or signs connected to a stranger abduction, and this may have contributed to the overwhelming lack of development for her case. What little information we have about the night Antoinette was abducted comes from three primary sources: her mother, Penny, and her sisters, Wendy and Sadie. According to Penny, she fell asleep sometime around 3 a.m. and doesn't recall hearing or seeing anything that night. Sadie reportedly heard the first knock at the door, the one to which no one answered, but nothing else. Initially, when asked, Wendy claimed to have heard the second knock, but nothing else. 5 years later, she would report having witnessed the actual abduction of her sister. So really, when you narrow it down and eliminate Penny for a lack of having seen or heard anything, you're left with the eyewitness accounts of a 7- and 5-year-old. Eyewitness accounts are notoriously flawed and inaccurate. How much more inaccurate the events of that evening are described due to the young age of the witnesses can only be hypothesized about, but for anyone who has ever asked a young child about a difficult situation, it's rare that you're going to get the exact truth of what occurred, especially if one of those children is frightened that her description of the abduction might get her into trouble. That's not to say that the children lied, or at least not to say that they lied purposefully. The true fact of the matter is that we just don't know how dependable any of the accounts are of that evening when the sources are put under any kind of major scrutiny. One detail, though, which many have found fascinating, is about the abductor himself. Wendy did report seeing a man, possibly two, involved in the abduction. She remembers seeing Antoinette grabbed and taken. She remembers hearing her sister cry out and struggle against her assailant, and she remembers watching Antoinette disappear into the back of a brown van, parked and waiting. The one detail Wendy couldn't remember, or the one area of this memory which was too difficult for her to recall, was the abductor himself. She was unable to give authorities a description of the man. For whatever reason, he didn't stick out in her mind, or she didn't look closely enough at the time. For those who believe in the stranger theory, this detail is often used as corroboration, as most people have argued that, were the abductor a family member or someone who had been around Antoinette and her family, Wendy probably would have recognized him. Sure, it's entirely possible that Wendy either never got a look at the guy or was so traumatized by the situation that she blanked out his face. But for the most part, there's an argument to be made that the man simply wasn't recognized. When you factor that in with the detail about the brown van, it becomes even more curious. Police worked hard to try and track down anyone connected to the family, either directly or indirectly, who owned a brown van and were unable to do so. None of the details seemed to match up with the idea of the abductor being connected to the family. The only piece of information we have that really makes anyone think this was a familial or acquaintance abduction is that, according to Wendy, when the man knocked on the door, he told Antoinette that it was her Uncle Joe. There's a couple of different ideas that have been offered as possible answers here. Some people believe that the abductor may have either known Antoinette's uncle, or perhaps simply knew of him. Some believe that the abductor may have heard the name somewhere and simply took a shot at using it, while others still believe that Joe is a fairly common name and the abductor just took a complete wild stab in the dark, hoping that Antoinette would know an older man named Joe. I've often wondered if the man meant uncle in the less official sense, like when you're close with your friends and their kids and they call you aunt or uncle, but you're not really a family member. Could this guy have been referring to himself as Uncle Joe? And if so, is it possible that all this time his real name has been out there, but no one thought to really look closer at that statement? Unfortunately, we just don't know. There's really nothing else to work with. You have the phone call, though what can really be gleaned from it? We don't even know for certain if it was truly Antoinette or not, something I'll get into more deeply in the next theory. Then there's the waitress's account, seeing her in Carson City, though even that can't be confirmed. If it was in fact Antoinette that the woman saw, that would suggest that whoever had taken her was either still in possession of her or had passed her along to someone else. I guess the question would be, why 5 years later would these people be bringing Antoinette out in public areas for lunch? The restaurant sighting has its list of supporters and detractors. I kind of fall in the middle on things. I can't say whether it's legitimate or not, though I do believe that the waitress thought it was legitimate. But we also have to keep in mind that she was going off the young woman's behavior in combination with a recent viewing of an age-progressed photograph of Antoinette. If indeed the young woman was acting the way the waitress says she was, then I definitely think something disturbing was going on there, and she may have been the victim of an abduction, or perhaps something worse. But I see little which confirms that it was actually Antoinette. Even police have been split by this encounter and can't say for certain, one way or the other, whether or not it's legitimate. Sadly, in the vast majority of abductions by stranger, the victim is usually killed rather quickly following the abduction itself. To survive a few days is actually rare, and most of the time the abductor will kill his or her victim within hours of the initial crime. To this day, many investigators believe this may have been the case with Antoinette, and that the reason she was never found was because she was murdered and disposed of quickly. If we're looking at a stranger abduction, that's a likelihood that's difficult to ignore. There is always the possibility that this random person or persons made the choice to abduct the 9-year-old and had some kind of a plan for what would be done with her, but there's also the possibility that the abductor's plan involved murder. Some people believe the stranger abduction theory could be related to Wellesley Daniels, the pedophile who had been targeting boys in the area. While this is a possibility, no evidence was ever found to link Daniels to Antoinette. Also, Daniels appeared to have had a proclivity for young boys over young girls, and in no other case did he murder or abduct, at least not abduct in the way that they never returned home. There are certainly those who disagree with the stranger possibility, saying that the crime feels too well-timed and executed to have just been performed on a whim. Somehow the person who took Antoinette that night knew what to say to get her to open the door. He didn't risk knocking when Penny was awake or when the babysitter was present. The man waited until everyone appeared to be asleep, knocked, claimed he was Uncle Joe, and then grabbed Antoinette. How did he know Antoinette would answer the door and not one of her sisters or even Penny? Did it really matter to him who he took, or was the plan ultimately just to abduct someone, adult or child? Or did this man somehow have inside knowledge which granted him the ability to pull the crime off more efficiently? This line of thinking leads us into the second theory, that Penny Calladito may have either had more information about the abduction or could have been directly involved in it. Early on in the investigation, no one really looked at Penny as someone who may have had further knowledge about the abduction. At least, no one commented on it publicly. In the 30-plus years since the crime occurred, at least one investigator who worked the case has publicly acknowledged that he believed Penny may have knew more than she was saying. This same investigator, Detective Marty Escabille, also dropped the knowledge that Penny had taken and failed a polygraph examination as given by the FBI. Now, I'm not a huge proponent of polygraphs, so whether someone passes or fails usually doesn't mean much to me. I can't help but wonder, though, if perhaps Escabille questioned Penny's involvement based on more than just a failed polygraph. But in terms of this subject, law enforcement has been fairly quiet about it. A lot of people have analyzed Penny and tried to determine whether or not she could have been involved, and perhaps more importantly, why she would have been involved. I've read all kinds of theories on this, from Penny having a drug debt which resulted in the abduction, to Penny allowing Antoinette to be taken in exchange for money. Remember, there was that rumor about her suddenly having cash and buying a new car. I have no verifiable proof that that ever happened. It's just something locals reported. You'd imagine that, had Penny suddenly come into money, law enforcement would have taken a much closer look at her. The fact of the matter is, the district attorney never chose to pursue or even discuss charges against Penny, which to me means either they didn't think they had enough evidence to get a conviction, or they simply didn't believe Penny was involved in the first place. There was the rumor that Penny and Larry Estrada were somehow involved in the drug trade. While this, too, can be classified as just a rumor, I do feel it has a bit more credence, as even law enforcement has made this statement. If indeed Penny was involved, then it wouldn't be surprising that she'd be around some shady characters. Neighbors reported that it wasn't uncommon to see visitors at the home at all hours of the night, which may have taken to support the drug-dealing scenario. Estrada acknowledged in an interview that he had connections to people on the street who didn't get along with law enforcement, and many have taken this to mean that he had connections to various criminals and possibly through his own alleged involvement in drug trafficking. It isn't uncommon for families to be threatened in the drug world, be it by other drug dealers or even people that you're working for. It's a cutthroat business, to say the least. I do think it's interesting to note that there's a lot more talk about Larry's involvement in drugs than there is Penny's, and just 3 years after his daughter is abducted, Larry's sister also disappears. That doesn't necessarily mean Penny was involved, but many believe it does suggest she may have had an idea of who was behind the crime, but could have been too afraid for herself or her other children to tell investigators. It all depends on how you look at this case. Some people think Penny knew more. Some people think Penny was involved. I've even read a couple of analyses performed by independent researchers who have accused Penny of not only setting Antoinette up to be taken, but also believe that she faked the phone call that came into the Gallup Police Department, as well as possibly coaching Wendy to tell investigators what she had seen the night of the abduction. I don't know that I'd go that far, but it's worth analyzing. In terms of setting Antoinette up, Penny acknowledged that she arrived home at midnight and stayed up until 3 a.m. talking to Antoinette. Some have suggested that this was done to ensure Antoinette would be awake when the knock came on the door. Some have even gone so far as to allege that Penny may have been awake at this time and told Antoinette to answer the door. There's no evidence for this, but it's an interesting take. In terms of the call to the police, I have a lot of doubts about it. Firstly, it's difficult to analyze when the entirety of the call hasn't been released. We've been told there's an additional 18 or so seconds in which a second voice can be heard, but that's never gotten airplay. The only thing that confirms the call came from Antoinette is Penny's belief that it's her daughter's voice. Well, she doesn't even say it's her daughter's voice. She specifies that the way she says her last name and the way she screams sound like Antoinette. Penny even said no one would say her name that way, the right way, if it were just a prank. The problem I have with this call comes from the adult voice we hear. I'm sorry, and maybe it's just me, but I have a difficult time accepting that that's a male voice. It just sounds female to me, or at least much higher pitched. The second voice has been referred to as sounding elderly and male, but I've never heard it, so I can't confirm that. While I question the gender of the adult in the call, I also question the call itself. I have a lot of difficulty accepting that a 10-year-old, as Antoinette would have been at the time of the call, made the choice to dial up the non-emergency number for the Gallup Police Department rather than just dialing 911. I don't even know the non-emergency number for my local police department, and it seems likely that if a 10-year-old got access to a phone in this situation, she'd be much more likely to just dial 911. Many people believe that the fact that the caller didn't dial 911 suggests that it was an active attempt to hinder the investigation of the Gallup police, to send them on a wild goose chase. The call was too short to be traced, though the young voice on the line specified that she was in Albuquerque. Had she dialed 911, she'd have gotten a police department in Albuquerque, not Gallup. Kind of makes you wonder, did someone somehow have the Gallup phone number memorized and gave it to her? Did she look it up, or did she somehow have it memorized? And even if she did, why wouldn't you just dial 911? I definitely believe the voice on the call is a female child, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's Antoinette. Police have been sort of back and forth on this call, unsure if it's genuine or not. So there's basically three possibilities. It was either a genuine call and Antoinette was reaching out for help, or it was a complex prank launched by random people who thought it would be funny, or it was planned and executed by Penny Calladito. Many people believe that one of Antoinette's sisters could say her name correctly, and if the adult voice heard on the audio is female, some wonder if it could have been Penny. This would be especially easy to get away with if Penny knew she'd be the one they'd come to authenticate the voice. While this is possible, I do have a couple of issues with the idea that Penny was behind the call. Firstly, why would she do this? A year had passed. It wasn't like investigators were getting anywhere. It's risky to make this call in hopes that they don't trace it in order to throw off an investigation which, by this time, had grown cold. Secondly, if Penny did make this call and used one of her daughters to assist her, and most people believe that would be Wendy, how is it possible that over 33 years later this has never come out? Wendy was 5 when Antoinette was taken, 6 when the call came in. How many 6-year-olds do you know that can help keep something like this a secret? Yeah, it's possible, but especially now that Penny has passed away, why would you continue to feed into the lie if you knew it was a setup? Well, maybe the child was young enough to allow her memory to be tainted, and maybe she fully believes the call is real and either doesn't remember or repressed being involved in it. How many details from your life at age 6 can you remember accurately, without even the question of how much of the memory is real versus imagined? It's fairly common for our memories to change over time, become exaggerated, for details to alter, and eventually it becomes too difficult to know what the true memory really was. As humans, we have an amazing way of convincing ourselves something happened one way when it actually happened in another. And I guess you'd have to ask, what would Penny have hoped to have gained from this call? Some have suggested that investigators were looking at her as being involved, and so she needed to do something to distract them. And I could buy that, but it's a hell of a risk to make the call yourself, and you certainly can't hire someone to do it. The more people know a secret, the more likely it is to be discovered. People do stupid things out of fear, and maybe this is one of those instances, but I just don't know. One angle people often point to is that if it was Antoinette, she really didn't give much helpful information. She said her name, she said Albuquerque, but that was it. I don't put a lot of emphasis on this. She was 10 years old, and who knows if she had an address or knew what to say. She may have suddenly had a moment free with a phone and made the call to the best of her abilities, though I still question where the call was made to. Ultimately, it seems unlikely to me that Penny made this call or was involved in it, but I do think there's a good chance that it was a hoax anyway. My two main reasons for thinking this are the fact that the call was made directly to the Gallup police and how long it took for the phone to be hung up. If you're an abductor and you catch your victim on the phone, yeah, you might grab her and pull her away, but you're also going to hang the phone up, especially if there's a second voice present. So why does the abductor pull her away and yet the line stays open and active for another 20 seconds? Sure, maybe Antoinette fought back and struggled and made it difficult, but I still find it hard to believe that an adult wouldn't be able to take the phone from a 10-year-old and hang it up rather quickly, or just pull the phone line out of the phone itself. It's entirely possible that it was Antoinette on that call, but I just can't fully put my support behind that. So if Penny didn't fake the call, is it possible she helped coach Wendy's story? I'd have to argue that's a possibility. Imagine telling a 5-year-old over and over what you want her to believe. You've got 5 years to hammer this into her. You can manipulate her by saying if she doesn't tell this story, her sister could be in danger, or even Penny herself. Or maybe it was just something that was mentioned to Wendy in passing multiple times until she believed it. Remember, we're dealing with a 10-year-old who tells police what she saw when she was 5. But I do have one problem with the idea that Penny coached Wendy. Penny never brought Wendy to the police to tell them this story. If investigators hadn't shown up at Penny's school that day to ask her follow-up questions, they may never have learned this story. If indeed the point was for Wendy to tell a false story to help protect Penny, why did she wait 5 years to get this done and also wait for investigators to come to Wendy and not the other way around? I do have my doubts about the veracity of Wendy's story, but that's not based on the belief that Penny interfered. It's just based on a 10-year-old recalling a 5-year-old memory from a traumatic night. If Wendy did see her sister taken, that's a horrible trauma to have to live with and likely would have caused all sorts of psychological issues related to guilt, helplessness, who knows? Maybe that explains why Wendy sank into drugs and alcohol when she got older. I read several accounts from people who claimed to have known Wendy when she was growing up, and they said she was a troublemaker and a liar. Well, Wendy admits as much. She was in a bad way for a long time, but did manage to clean up. Does that mean her lies go all the way back to her being 10 years old? Or is it possible that she became the way she was as a direct result of what she witnessed, plus what happened to her family following Antoinette's abduction? It's impossible to know whether or not Penny was involved or had more information than she shared. Police tried to speak to her on her deathbed to see if she'd give them anything, but they didn't make it in time. I don't know what they hoped to learn, but it does seem that they believe she knew something more. Whatever she knew, Penny took it to the grave. When it comes to the idea that Penny may have been involved, you can't rule it in and you can't rule it out. When it comes to her having more knowledge, I think that's more plausible. I think it's entirely possible that Penny had an idea of who may have been involved. Maybe she didn't know for sure, or maybe she did but was afraid to name the perpetrator. Of course, I've always wondered if she knew, why not tell someone other than the police? Larry Estrada, for instance. If she really was involved in the drug world, and Larry was some kind of dealer or trafficker, and if he really did have connections to questionable people on the street, Couldn't he have tried something to strike back? That's difficult to answer, but I've always believed that if Penny knew something, she didn't share it to protect her other children. Penny has taken a lot of hits over this theory in the years since Antoinette was abducted. I don't know how fair or unfair it's all been. To a degree, I believe that if a missing child is involved, then you should push the limits to do whatever you have to do to get an answer. However, 33 years later, and Penny's been gone for 20 of those years, and not a single person from her life has ever come forward to suggest this possibility. Not one close friend, relative, or acquaintance has ever publicly spoke about their suspicion that she could have been involved. That's really difficult for me to accept. Either Penny was involved and somehow managed to keep her mouth shut, even while sinking into alcoholism and drug abuse, or Penny didn't know anything but was persecuted for it regardless. In a missing child case, the parents should always be looked at first. Investigators spent years looking at Penny and could never pin anything on her. This woman was not a criminal mastermind, and while we may never know for sure, if we're going purely on evidence, there's really nothing here to suggest any involvement or deception other than the failed polygraph. I did want to make one note about that. I read an article with a former FBI agent who worked on this case, and all he would say about it was, "That was a weird one." I've always wondered what he meant by that. One last thing on this. Some people have speculated the possibility that Penny may have arrived home from her night out, drunk, gotten into some kind of an argument with Antoinette, and by one way or another, did something which resulted in Antoinette's death. A lot of people think Penny may have killed Antoinette on accident and then covered it up. That's an interesting theory, and certainly possible, but it would appear Penny would have had to have committed this crime in a way where she left no physical evidence behind. Police checked through the apartment. Blood isn't easy to clean up. Now, maybe it happened in a bloodless way, but it's hard to imagine something like strangulation or poisoning as an accident. It's certainly something to look at, but I do think had something like this occurred, not only would there have been some trace of physical evidence in the house, but Sadie or Wendy likely would have heard or seen something. Does that mean they'd have told what they saw? Well, I can't really answer that question. So if it wasn't a stranger, and if it wasn't Penny, that leaves only the theory that investigators had from day one, that this abduction was planned and executed by someone who either knew Antoinette, her family, or was a member of her family. Police believe that Antoinette would have known better than to open the door to someone she didn't recognize. Now, if someone comes to your door and says, "It's Uncle Joe," you can probably tell if that voice is your Uncle Joe or not. However, being 9 years old at, say, 3 a.m, maybe your hearing's a little off, or you're a little disoriented. So maybe Antoinette did recognize the voice, or maybe she thought she did. One detail I've always found fascinating is that Antoinette was taken the second time the man knocked on the door. Allegedly, he had knocked earlier in the night, but no one answered. And there's been a report that they didn't recognize the man or his voice. That makes it sound like someone looked out the window and saw him. Yet nothing's ever really been said about that. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was 9 years old and someone was knocking on the door in the middle of the night, I had one of two responses. Either I ignored it and didn't go near that door, or I woke up my parents and told them someone was knocking at the door. Everyone's different, and by no means am I trying to say that Antoinette should have done things differently here. She did ignore it the first time. Maybe she tried to wake up Penny. Maybe she even succeeded, but Penny, half asleep, could have easily muttered something like, "See who it is," and then fell back asleep, never even remembering it. We simply don't know. But the fact of the matter is, if Antoinette was in the habit of looking out the window to see who was there and didn't answer the door for strangers, there's a good chance she recognized the person who was knocking on that door. In the first theory, I discussed Wendy's account and how she obviously didn't recognize the person who took Antoinette. Well, Antoinette was older, was in school, and likely was around people that Wendy would have never seen. Teachers, coaches, friends' parents. Maybe it was someone Antoinette did know, but not someone that anyone else in her family would have known. Remember earlier how I said it might have just been that whole close friend thing of calling yourself aunt or uncle? What if this guy knew Antoinette, and his name was Joe, and she referred to him as Uncle Joe? If it was someone from school, how would anyone ever know about their possible friendship? That may be a little far-fetched, but I don't think it's something beyond possibility. Outside of a situation where only Antoinette would have recognized this man, there really is only the possibility that it would have been someone connected to her family who Penny, at least, might have recognized. Lucky for him then, I suppose, that he just happened to knock on the door in the early morning hours and he got Antoinette at the door instead of Penny. How different would the circumstances have been if Penny had come to the door instead? That's an answer we'll never know, but it's often made me wonder if Antoinette was even the target of this abduction. Was it planned out and she was specifically marked for abduction, or was it a matter of grabbing whoever opened the door? If I were knocking on a door sometime between 3 and 7 a.m., I'd be expecting an adult to open that door, not a child. Some people have speculated that the abductor was watching the home. He didn't knock when the babysitter was there. He didn't knock when Penny came home. He knocked sometime around 3 a.m. and then again sometime before 7 a.m. Did he wait to ensure Penny was asleep? Also, if Antoinette was the target, why abduct her in this way? Wouldn't it have been easier to grab her when she was out playing or pick her up from school one day, if indeed it was someone she knew? This was 1986, and there weren't security measures like there are now. You could pull up at a school, claim your Uncle Joe, and pick a kid up at random, and it happened a lot more than you'd expect. Going to the home in the early morning hours is a very risky way to abduct a child. We've seen cases where this has happened. Isabel Celis is a prime example that some people will just enter a home with reckless abandon and take a chance, and sometimes it works for them. But that was another case where we all thought it was a family member, and as it turned out, it wasn't. People can be shady, but also innocent. The main problem with the theory that this may have been a family member or someone connected to the family is that authorities looked at all these people pretty closely and never found anything. None of them had a brown van. Many of them had alibis for where they were that night, and police were able to confirm them. And I guess at the core, the question would go to motive. Why would a friend or family member abduct Antoinette? All right, maybe they have psychological problems, and that's certainly possible. Maybe they didn't like seeing Antoinette at 9 years old, having to basically be an adult in raising her sisters while Penny went out drinking. Of course, were this the case, you'd imagine Antoinette would have shown up alive and well by now. Sure, it's possible, though why care more about Antoinette than Wendy or Sadie? Well, that leads to an interesting difference between the sisters. The sisters had a lot in common. They spent a lot of time together. They all grew up together. So what could possibly have been different about them? Why would Antoinette maybe have been targeted over the other two? Well, Wendy and Sadie had the same father. Antoinette's father was Larry Estrada. I don't know why, but for the most part, when this case is examined, people put a hell of a lot of scrutiny on Penny, but I rarely see any on Larry. This is a man who allegedly was involved in the drug trade, was Antoinette's biological father, despite multiple discrepancies in local papers, and just 3 years later, his own sister went missing. That doesn't necessarily mean he was involved in either case, but I don't know that there's anything which directly rules him out. Sure, police likely investigated him, and he must have had some kind of an alibi, which made them look elsewhere. But this is an area of the case that's sort of shrouded in mystery. Larry himself is a mystery, but one which I think if you're going to target Penny for, you should also target Larry. The abduction of Antoinette Cayadito is a confusing and complicated case with little factual evidence to work off of. For 33 years, investigators have, essentially, been hitting nothing but brick walls. Whatever little piece of information might have helped further this case along, it simply never developed. Anything that could have helped lead investigators to the truth was never found. For the most part, it's 100% believed that Antoinette Cayadito was abducted that night and that her disappearance wasn't connected in any way to any other kind of crime. Unfortunately, whoever did take Antoinette was either very good or very lucky. For 33 years, Gallup, New Mexico has been plastered with missing persons posters displaying Antoinette's image from the age of 9 all the way through age-progressed photos of her in her 30s. A town and a family watched a child grow up on missing persons flyers. Everything Antoinette could have been was stolen one dark April morning, and in that instant, one person's choice destroyed a family and any chance Antoinette would ever have at a good, happy, normal life. If alive today, Antoinette would be 42 years old. Who knows what she could have brought to this world or how she could have contributed? Who knows what her family would have been like had she been around? Antoinette never got a chance to live the life she wanted, the way she wanted. She never got a chance to travel, to grow up, to have her first kiss, get a degree, build a career. Every little thing so many of us take for granted was stolen right along with Antoinette. Unfortunately, 3 decades later, we're no closer to learning the truth. Unless someone confesses, new evidence is discovered, or Antoinette herself is found, this case remains open, unsolved, and extremely cold. If you're looking for more information about the abduction of Antoinette Cayadito, there are many forums and news articles examining her case. Unsolved Mysteries also ran a segment on her case. If you have any information about the abduction of Antoinette Cayadito, please contact the Gallup Police Department at area code 505-863-9365. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, Instagram message me at TraceEvidencePod, or comment in the Facebook group. I'm going to play a quick promo for you. Stick around afterwards for information about a contest in which you can become a part of Trace Evidence.
On April 23rd, 2007, I was convicted of the murder and dismemberment of my husband.
On direct appeal, we examined the murder conviction of Melanie McGuire following a highly publicized trial. Looking at the evidence that was presented and the evidence that may have seemed insignificant at the time, we form our own conclusion about Melanie's guilt.
I know when I should have left.
She would never do this, but I think she knows something.
Am I telling them I'm having an affair? Nobody's asking. He owed money out on the street, and that's how you get shot here and here.
It's unlikely that her pistol was used in this crime.
It's not about who's innocent or guilty. It's about a notch in your belt.
Searches that include how to kill your wife, how to poison your wife.
They had bags that contain victims' parts.
Prosecutor is fierce. You will be taking the stand, literally live on court TV. I expected the worst, and what I got was one step shy of the worst.
To listen to Direct Appeal, please download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
So, you've just heard a podcast promo, and that's what this contest is all about. Every year, I record a new promo to advertise Trace Evidence. And this year, rather than doing all the talking myself, I wanted to get you involved. What would you say to convince a friend to listen to Trace Evidence? What is it about Trace Evidence that you like? Write yourself a little script, record it, and send it to me. You can email me the audio file at traceevidencepod@gmail.com, or if you don't have the setup to record, you can leave a voicemail at 770-744-5104. Winners will have their clip inserted into the promo and will receive some Trace Evidence gear. For full contest details and information, visit trace-evidence.com/promo. I look forward to hearing from you. A special shout out and thank you to Trace Evidence Patreon producers Alicia Lorraine, Krista Colvin, Deani Dyson, Eamon Brady, Emily Smith, Julia Rexon, Kate Alexander, Megan, Randy Weiland, Chandra Moreau, Tara Doble, Megan Cotter, and Tom Archer. Trace Evidence wouldn't be possible without the kindness of all of you amazing listeners. Visit patreon.com/traceevidence for more information. I want to thank you for listening to this episode, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.